news, sports, AccuWeather, and more. Wake up with the information you need on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Setter is our fabulous producer. We appreciate all of his help and hard work very much. On the news line with us now, Professor Alexander Riley's back on the line. He's a professor of sociology at Bucknell University. We're going to talk about a series of conversations that are happening at Bucknell called What Does It Mean to Be an American in the Year 2020. Good morning, Dr. Riley. Thanks for calling back in today.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
I'm doing fabulous. Good to hear from you again. You know, all is now normal with the world. Dr. Riley's back on the line, so we can proceed with our year.
It's been a little while.
I appreciate that. In a thumbnail, what is the series? What does it mean to be an American? What are you looking at there?
Well, this is a gigantic topic. What does it mean to be an American, American identity, and trying to question some of the typical ways that we have defined that, at least in academia, and to really dig into some of the complexity behind American identity, that's what we're trying to do. So we've got a range of speakers who are going to take on some different parts of that question. Alan Gelzo, the Princeton historian, was already here in October, and he talked about an historical aspect of American identity and dealt with the Civil War and the question of what it has to say about identity regarding race and racial relations in the country, and just tried to give us a little bit of a sketch of his view of what he thinks the Civil War meant for those aspects of American identity. A little later in this semester, we'll have some other speakers talking about religious identity and sexual identity, surrounding sexual expression, and in fact the relationship between those. And we'll have another speaker talking about immigration and American identity. Victor Davis Hanson will come back in March and talk about another historical aspect of American identity, because we're coming up on the 70-year anniversary of the Korean War. So he's going to talk about that war and more broadly about the Cold War and the role that it played in American identity, especially in the 20th century when it was still ongoing. But our speaker for this week is going to be talking specifically about an aspect of identity that's of great interest to a lot of academics like myself who study this topic, but I think it's of interest to just about everybody in the country, too, who's interested in a bunch of these pieces of American identity. She's going to be this is Jen Silva, the former Bucknell colleague who left last year to go to another institution, but she's coming back to talk to us about class identity and how American differences in socioeconomic position and social class and experiences having to do with basically how much money you make and how much money your family makes, and as a result of that, the kinds of neighborhoods you live in, the kinds of prospects you have for jobs and employment and so forth, how those things reflect on American identity.
Well, she spends some of her time researching how your socioeconomic level correlates to your level of political knowledge and engagement. Dig into that a little bit.
That's right.
Yeah, tell us more about that.
Yes, indeed. She spent a good while out in Mount Carmel, not too far from here, doing research for her latest book. But she's also looked at populations and socioeconomic groups that are fairly similar to the group out in Mount Carmel over the course of her last couple of books. You're exactly right. She's been fundamentally interested in this question of the relationship between socioeconomic class position, that is the class background that someone has, and the political beliefs and political ideas that they have. One of the practical questions that Jen has been interested in for a long while is the question of why it is that you find a significant amount of support among folks in the lower socioeconomic classes, in what we sometimes still call the working classes in sociology. There's a significant amount of support in those groups sometimes for political groups on the right, which is, according to a fair amount of academic theory about this, seems counterintuitive, because a lot of sociologists and a lot of political scientists historically who have studied this question have imagined that it makes a kind of logical sense for poorer people, for people in the lower socioeconomic classes, working class folks, to be supportive of the political left, because the political left is often operating according to political principles which are designed to redirect funds from the richer folks to poorer folks, and so therefore the thinking is that the left politics would be helpful for poorer Americans, for people in the working class. And yet you see a significant amount of people, Jen's going to talk specifically about the fact that when she was doing research out in Mount Carmel, it was in the run-up to the 2016 election. So she was really interested in that question of where do these folks in Mount Carmel that she's interviewing, where do they stand on the 2016 election? There were a lot of Trump supporters among the folks that she was interviewing, and so that was really fascinating for her, and she tried to dig into that in the interviews in the book.
And why is that class attracted to conservatives? Lawrence's worthless theory would be that it's almost, it's, you know, we may not have much, or we may be surrounded by what is an increasing opioid dilemma, and our economic hope seems flat, but I'll tell you what, we are staunch conservative Republican Americans, and we own that.
That's right. Well, there's a great little bit from the book that I've cut out here just as a conversation starter on this, because I think it so perfectly says in the context of a specific interview a lot of what Jen discovered in the book, and that's she's interviewing a 38-year-old white man from out there in Mount Carmel who's the grandson of a coal miner. He's got a high school degree. He used to work as an EMT, but he's been out of work since 2009. And he's got some physical ailments. He's in chronic pain. Spends a lot of his time lying on a recliner, and he's taking a fair amount of medication for his medical problems. This is a guy who voted for Barack Obama in 2008, but today his criticism of the Democrats is that they don't do enough to sustain people like himself as they did in the past. And here's a little bit of a quote, if I may, from this particular subject from Jen Silva's book. He says, "I'm a Democrat." This is in the run-up of the 2016 election. "I'm a Democrat," he says, "but I hate Hillary. My dad was a Democrat. His father was a Vietnam veteran who had just passed away a few years ago before the interview. He says, "At one time, the Democrats helped our family. They really did. But right now, they don't do enough to help people. They don't do enough to create jobs and get people back to work." And so he then goes on to talk about why he thinks Donald Trump might be better at doing that. And then he goes into some stuff that I think is really telling along the line of what you were just talking about, Mark. He says, as the American flag, he says, there's an old phrase that says, as the American flag blows in the wind, that wind is the last breath of every soldier that has died, blowing that back and forth for freedom. I don't care how much I hurt, I'll always salute, I'll always stand for it, and I'll always cover my heart. I think, he says, the interviewer, this is Jen Silva, asks him, "Do you think the American dream is still alive?" He says, "I think it's dying. I really do. I mean, for some people, I think for the refugees, it's still alive. But for anybody living here, it's dying. If I had a Confederate flag up outside my house, people would say it was a hate crime. But if I had a gay flag or an Islam flag, people would celebrate it. Hell, even having an American flag is seen as a hate crime, but that will come down over my dead body." So he goes on. But that gives you a little bit of a sense of some of the things that are informing in this guy's past, in his belief system, some of the things that are informing his political decisions, specifically around the 2016 election, but I think more generally. It's a pretty good indication that a lot of these folks, like this guy in the interview who I just cited, that not only did they vote for Trump in 2016, they're still supportive of the president a few years later, and they're likely to vote for him again in the election that's coming up in 2020.
Wow. Is she going to go back and talk to him this year?
I hope.
Maybe while she's in the region, she'll go visit him again. Honestly, I'd like to see, just how much how that support wavers. I always call some reasons folks vote for political people as whimsical. But anyway, go ahead. Well, yeah, I always call it sometimes whimsical, the way people decide who they're going to vote for. But in this particular case, you know, he has real reasons and, real life reasons to select his candidate. Well, and the other thing that should be noted is that he is politically active. He does vote. You know, there's a segment of, probably every segment of our society who does not vote. You know, I know a lot of working class good folks like me who don't vote. You know, they have opinions, but they don't go to the polls. So it doesn't end up making a difference.
That's correct. That's right.
All right.
I should note, too, that Jen's book is titled We're Still Here, Pain and Politics in the Heart of America. Just came out with Oxford University Press last year. So any listeners who are interested in getting into more of those details and to the broad analysis that that she brings to bear on all the stuff that she's talking about in the book. You can get that book on Amazon and elsewhere, and she's going to be that'll be the subject certainly of the talk when she's here on this Wednesday, January 22nd. She'll be here at 7 p.m. in the good old Bucknell Hall for the talk. So we're really looking forward to that.
All right, Bucknell Hall. Which building is that? I'm not. I know where the Langone Center is, but where's Bucknell Hall?
Bucknell Hall's right down at the bottom of the hill there, leading up to the main campus area. It's just as you're coming around. It's very very close to the president's house there, facing the hill that goes up to the science quad and then to the Malasardi quad.
I gotcha. Okay, so I can visualize that. Folks can follow the signage that's available on campus. We're still here. Pain and Politics in the Heart of America, which, as near as I can tell, it is a local book in every way. I mean, the interviews are local. The issues are literally right next door. So,
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, should be a super talk with Professor Jennifer Silva. Well, Dr. Riley, thank you so much for the information, for the advance. We'll be in touch with you and other folks as this year progresses. Thank you always so much for all the insights into our body politic that you keep us up to date on. Thank you again, sir.
My pleasure, Mark. Mark, may I say one more quick thing that I almost forgot?
Sure.
Also, in addition to her Wednesday talk, on Thursday of this week at noon over in the Humanities Center, Jen and I are going to be having a talk over lunch about another question that I think has been of some significant interest to you, because we've talked about it a good deal in some of the previous performances. We're just going to talk about how it is that people can have difficult conversations over political differences, like interpreting the 2016 election and then talking about the 2020 election. So any of your listeners who are interested in that topic and would like to see a little dialogue between two professors of sociology who have rather different politics, but have a little bit of experience also talking about this stuff, because we're former colleagues and friends, and so we're able to talk past our differences and try to learn something in the process. That Thursday talk at noon might be of some interest as well. All of this stuff is advertised up on our website at plc.blog.bucknell.edu.
Is one of you conservative? Is one of you conservative and the other more liberal?
That is correct. I'll leave it to your listeners to guess which
okay.
one of us is conservative.
Oh, gosh, do tell. Well, I know Dr. Severs, we pinned him into a corner one time, and he talks conservatively if he really asks. So, all right, well, we'll have the same questions for you someday. Thank you so much, Dr. Riley. Very much appreciated. Dr. Alexander Riley, professor of sociology at Bucknell University, the talk of which he spoke today, the author of the book We're Still Here, Pain and Politics in the Heart of America. And when she says Heart of America, she means Northumberland County and the coal regions. And her talk is Wednesday night, 7 p.m. at Bucknell Hall, and then Thursdays, that noontime luncheon conversation. Details about all of these at bucknell.edu.